Why are they shaking their heads? We're stuck in slow life. Is it the beating of the chest that makes us feel the rest?
This is March Twisdale, producer and host of a brand new show here on Voice of Vashon called Focus On. Let me start by asking a question. Have you ever wondered what great ideas might be hiding just next door or in another culture or country? If so, then this is the show for you. Today, I will be talking with David Zepernick. Now, did I pronounce that correctly?
That's correct, yes.
Awesome. One of several guests I connected with as a result of my trip through the European Union this June. Hey, David, how are you doing today?
Fine, thanks. And thank you for having me here as part of your show.
Yes, absolutely. I'm thrilled that we were able to make it work. I appreciate your time. Focus On is recorded in the studios of Voice of Vashon, broadcast at 11 a.m. on Sundays and 5 p.m. on Fridays here in the Seattle area on 101.9 FM KVSH. Focus On and its sister show, Prose, Poetry, and Purpose, are also available as a podcast at my website, marchtwisdale.com. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in today. And now we're going to dive into the show. To get us started, David, if you can give our listeners a sense of who you are, what you do, that'd be great.
Of course, I would love to. Well, my name is David Zepernick, as mentioned. I am living in Denmark, in Copenhagen. I'm 44 years old. In my professional life, I work as head of communication in the life science industry. And I am also politically engaged and running for the upcoming local election in Denmark for the Social Liberal Party, which is a center-left party in Danish politics.
Basically, we talked about a few things before that tend to surprise or be of interest to my American audience in particular. And one of those was sort of how the Danish people feel about taxes. And I was wondering if you wanted to sort of explain a little bit about the perspective of the average Danish person when they think about the role of taxation and taxes in life and society.
Yes, I would love to. And of course, not all Danes might agree with everything I say. But in general, and compared to the US, we pay a substantial amount of taxes in Denmark. Actually, an average person would pay almost half his income in taxes, which I guess to most Americans sounds like a lot. And it is. And then you might ask, do people willingly pay half their salary in taxes? And the short answer is actually yes. If you take the political landscape in Denmark from what we locally call the very liberal to the somewhat more socialist parties, they all agree that the tax level should be somewhere between, say, 40 to 50%. That's the range that we're discussing. And then we take the entire political landscape from left to right. That's sort of within that range. So that's actually, nobody's suggesting that we should pay like 25%. Nobody's suggesting that we should pay 65%. Everybody sort of tend to agree that somewhere between the late 30s and about half is the should we say natural level. Mm-hmm. And then of course you say, well, why is that? Well, basically, there's several reasons for that, but basically because we tend to consider taxation a social investment in the group. We have a relatively homogeneous national community, so we pay a lot of tax. But since there's a sense of solidarity, national solidarity, it's basically considered to be okay. And also, most people would also benefit themselves during a lifetime. Take myself, for instance. Currently, I'm paying a lot of taxes. But when I was a student, I was receiving, we have free education. Universities are free. That's paid for via the taxes. I not even did it, it was my education, my 6 years at university for free. I also got an allowance from the state for 5 to 6 years. And now basically what I'm doing is I'm paying back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how most of us look at taxes. High taxes, but also high expectations as to the benefits that my personal benefits from the welfare state, but also other people's benefit, because at different times in your life, sometimes you will be a net contributor, as I am at this time, and I will be for my entire working life. But when I get older, and when I was younger, it was a different matter.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, like, you listed out the fact that you went to college and that was paid for. So let's say you take an average, I think the average American who were to get an actual master's, not just a bachelor's, because you were in school for 6 years, and I think up to 7 years is covered in Denmark. So that's usually probably about $75,000 to $100,000 for a person to get their master's. But also, as a parent, you have two children, right?
Yeah, three, actually.
Three. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So as a parent, one of the things that I find interesting for people in America, it is absolutely the norm for every parent, unless they are quite comfortable and wealthy, to say, oh, I wonder if my kids are going to be able to go to college, even if they have great, even if they have good grades, if they're not special enough to get, you know, a giant scholarship, how will I be able to afford for my child to go to college? And so in a way, there's this daily, constant, normal anxiety that permeates the parent culture as you're always wondering, will they be able to go to college? And then also in Denmark, if your kid falls down at the playground and breaks an arm, you just go to the doctor and they get taken care of and you're not economically anxious about that, correct?
That's correct. That's sort of part of the package, you can say, in mm-hmm. the welfare system that we've set up.
Mm-hmm.
We pay our taxes and we pay high taxes, but in exchange for that, we do get a social security. So mm-hmm. going to the doctor...
That's actually great. We think of Social Security in America as this thing that happens once you're like 65 and older. But Social Security, you can have lifelong Social Security of various yes. forms and types. That's a neat yes. way to use the term.
That's how we look at it. And I think that is also the reason why we accept to pay such high taxes, because we know we don't have to worry whether our children will go to college if they are... inclined to do so, and mm-hmm. if they have the grades that they need to have, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to worry about, you know, seeing a doctor. If we lose our job, we also have relatively generous social setup so that you will not be kicked out of your apartment or having absolutely no income
right.
the very next day. So that's what we get in return, you can say.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, of course, discuss which system is the best. But the thing, of course, that's unique about this system is that there's nobody in our system who needs to generate a profit. I mean, you don't have, it's not insurance based. Insurance companies need to generate a profit as well.
Right.
It works. And of course, it doesn't mean that we are not discussing whether... we are getting we have the right balance between taxes and the level of social security or health insurance
mm-hmm.
or the quality of the educational system. Of course, we discuss that all the time,
And I
Right.
think
maybe even more than you do, because when you pay so high taxes, you have high expectations. You expect to have sort of state-of-the-art education,
Right.
state-of-the-art healthcare, and so on and so forth. And whenever that, if you don't sense that you get state-of-the-art, then of course you complain and say, well, how can that be when we pay so much? So it's an ongoing discussion, but there's a general sense that we get what we pay for, and
Right.
consequently we are willing to pay quite a lot.
Right. We get what we pay for. You know, when you about a week ago we were having our pre-chat and you mentioned that idea of high taxes and high expectations, it really hit me that people in America, my sense as an American and as what other people are thinking, is that our expectations of what we expect to get back from having paid our taxes is actually very low. I think there's almost maybe this subtle understanding in the back of our minds that's saying we're not getting a lot of things back, but we really worked our butts off as hard as we could to pay as little as possible. So we paid very little, or we tried to pay very little, and now we get little back. And there may, I've never heard that spoken out loud, but I thought, what if that's actually going on in the subconscious of the country, which would explain part of why people do not get more outraged and do not seem to feel like they truly deserve college and medical care and all of these things. We talk about it like it's a human right, like it's this natural thing that on planet Earth we all deserve, but ultimately you do have to pay for these things. So we have to grapple with, are we ready to step up and start paying these bills on a community level so that everyone receives these services? Or do we want to continue to be sort of, you know, penny wise but pound foolish? And
Yes, and I think, I mean, from my perspective, I mean, the Danish society basically invested in me, gave me a free education, took care of whatever healthcare issue I've had as a child, nothing serious, but it was there, and now I'm just paying back.
And you
So
have three kids who are going to go forward and be able to go to college, and that's not on your dime, meaning directly as an individual, you're not like sweating it. Oh gosh, why'd we have that third one? You know, now we got to pay for three college degrees. You know, you don't even have to think that because it's just a guarantee.
it's a guarantee. Yes, they can go to college. It will not cost me a dime. Well, of course it will, because I might support them in one way or another. But I mean, they will go there, and it has nothing to do with my private economy. I mean, even if I go bankrupt tomorrow, they can still get a college degree if they want to.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much for sort of playing around with and exploring that side, because of course, that's the number one question that is shoved into our brains in the United States of America by easily about 40 or 50 years of purposeful media messaging, which is socialism or any type of a social program is bad, terrible, and if you're paying taxes, it's just awful. Nanny state. There's all these awful words that fly around in people's heads. And that's why I started this show, so we could start to hear from people who are actually living there, living that way, rather than talking heads on this side of the Atlantic, which sort of carries us over to the next topic that you brought up last week in our conversation, which was about the problems that are being caused by media bias. You want to explain a little bit about what specifically you're concerned about?
Yes, and my point of departure was actually that I am very engaged in what we here in Denmark call integration. That's the integration of immigrants, refugees, and so on and so forth. And we have a very heated debate about this. And I know, although I'm not familiar with the specific details of the US debate, I mean, we follow US politics in Denmark as well. The wall that Trump was promised to build, and so on, and make the Mexicans pay for, and so on and so forth. We have a very heated debate about some of the although the circumstances are very, very different, some of the same issues. And my point is just that you cannot use the media to understand the world. And that's actually a point that a Swedish professor, Hans Rosling, who died earlier this year, by the way, he makes several times. He's probably the most unlikely of all YouTube stars, but actually one of the most interesting. And I definitely think that watching his interviews is time well spent. But his point is that if you only get your impression of how the world works from the media, you will get biased information, because the news criteria that the media uses has an inbuilt bias, because mm-hmm. one of the key criteria is conflict. So any reporter, or at least most reporters, will go for a conflict. So that means that, for instance, gradual positive change will not be accurately covered by the media because it doesn't really meet the news criteria. Whereas conflict, something that's happening here and now, although it might be a very, very small part of the true story, it will be the part that will be highlighted. It will be the part you will read about in the media or watch in the news. And then you simply get a wrong idea about how big a problem actually is. And that's exactly, getting back to my point about integration, that's what we see in Denmark in our discussion. I, of course, as mentioned, I'm not familiar with the specific debate going on in the US, but I could imagine, then you must correct me if I'm wrong, that you have the same issue over there.
Well, definitely, of course, and basically probably really, really pretty much around the world, given that it's, you know, for a period of time, it was the consolidation of the media within individual country. And then you start noticing it's actually really global consolidation of media. So, but what I find, I mean, you guys in Denmark, of course, actually, in a way, are dealing with this in a unique and in a more powerful moment of history with what's going on with the refugees from everywhere, from Syria, North Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Europe. And I recently was interviewing someone who explained to me that one out of every five human beings on planet Earth right now is in transit.
Yeah.
So we have 20% of humanity, whether they are fleeing war or they are migrant workers that move with the seasons or for whatever reason, we have a huge number of people on the move. And with what's happening with the environment, you have the equatorial regions of the planet are, you know, whether it's desertification, whatever the causes. Of course, a lot of that is along the Middle East, and so then you've got just oil wars. So there's a lot of people who are fleeing, you know, north and south away from the equatorial region. So what I liked about the article that when I found out about you was that article, of course, it was written in Denmark. What I liked about the point was that this is an issue that is not going to go away this century. Human migration and movement is going to be front and center problem in search of a solution for at least the next 100 years. And room for improvement on how we think about this, not decisions, views, blah. I mean, literally how we think and conceptualize the idea of human movement on Earth. We have massive room for improvement. And so your point, I think, is so brilliant, because yes, there are authentic reasons for the people in Denmark to have an emotional reaction to migration and immigration and these things, because these affect life. What we don't necessarily need is the media lighting matches everywhere and trying to trigger our existing emotions to go in a certain direction of fear or anger or distrust. We're really going to have to be very logical and very honest and very intentional.
Exactly, and I think that's a huge problem. I'm I don't know. I don't have the solution, but I think, I mean, part of the solution is that we have to be very, very aware what is going on here. And I think, I mean, you said lighting matches, and we also have political forces, some of my political opponents, who are doing exactly that, at least in my view. And that's not to say that there are no problems, that and everything is wonderful. No, there are real problems, things that needs to be addressed. But in our case, in Denmark, we have, even though some of these foreigners have higher crime rates than the average Dane, part of the explanation, or a substantial part of the explanation, is that in Denmark we have extremely low crime rates. And even those foreigners that we are talking about here, they also have extremely low crime rates in Denmark, but it's bigger, it's higher than the average Danish. And then if you only focus on that, of course you will tend to think that all foreigners are potential criminals, even though 98% are law-abiding citizens, you know, going about their daily work, trying to, you know, make a living. So you get a twisted image about how the situation actually is. And I think.
There was that interesting article, and I won't go into the details, but it was like on the front of it was like such and such a sorry. It, well, on the front of it said such and such a statistic has doubled, and I thought, wow, it's doubled. That must be huge. And then I read further, and it had, quote, doubled from like 1% to 2% of an entire population. I thought, that's still incredibly small, but the way the title had made it sound like it was this huge change. And then I'm like, wait, well, yeah, it doubled, but you're still talking, you know. So yeah, I mean.
And we have that challenge here in Denmark. And I think some of the explanation for that is that we are still a relatively monocultural society. I have African ancestors. My grandfather is from West Africa. But generally speaking, Denmark is a relatively monocultural society. And I think we have to accept here in Denmark that although it is the newcomer who must adapt to our culture and change the most, we also have to change a little bit ourselves. And that's, at least to some people, a challenge, to put it mildly. And we have this duality in our national identity. Historically speaking, we are partly an outward-looking, open-minded, you know, merchant and sailors culture. And then part of our national identity is the more inward-looking farmer culture, emphasizing ownership of the land and belonging to the community and so on. And I think the view on insiders and outsiders simply differs between, depending on which part of the national identity you tend to sort of identify with. The merchant and sailors culture is more diverse and adopt foreigners more easily, whereas the what I now refer to as the farmer culture is more difficult to penetrate as an outsider. And that's something that we have to work with in Denmark.
You know, it's interesting because when I really think every single American child should be offered the opportunity to spend at least a semester abroad during their junior year of high school, because, and paid for it by the state, by the government. Because when you get out of the country, you don't just get to see other places in the world, but you actually start to see your own country in a new, broader and different light. You see things. It's like you can see the forest for the trees now.
Yes, that's and I think that's also why it is so extremely important that we get it right the first time. And it's not just because I am a dark-skinned or brown-skinned myself, and consequently have a very personal interest in the matter. But I think it's actually crucial for society as such, because will we be an outward-looking? Are we embracing the world? Not naively, and but or are we sort of just, you know, looking inward and, you know, looking back and trying to live a past that is long gone and that was not as glorious as some people might think. It's a struggle for what I would say hearts and souls, and a struggle for our national identity. I mean, or should I say, how to interpret our national heritage? Which part of it is our future to be based on, the inward looking part or the more outward looking part? And I think that's, well, to a substantial extent, define how a country like Denmark will cope in the modern global world.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a moment to do a station identification and just sort of let that thought percolate in people's minds for a second. So, hey, everyone, if you're just joining us, this is March Twisdale, producer and host of Focus On. And today I'm having a great time talking with David Zeprenik from Denmark. Before we return to the interview, I'd like to give a shout out to our community credit union, OCCU. KVSH programming support is provided by our community credit union, personal, professional, and full service, member-focused, and community-based. Conveniently located across from Thriftway at ourcu.com. Also, KVSH program support comes from Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe. Pastries in the morning, vegetarian lunches, wine, and music at night fill the friendly, casual atmosphere that is Snapdragon on Vashon Highway at the south end of Vashon Town. Oh, that they wrote that weird. Sorry, hold on. There we go. I'm going to say that one again. Also, KVSH program support comes from Snapdragon Bakery and Cafe. Pastries in the morning, vegetarian lunches, wine, and music at night fill the friendly, casual atmosphere that is Snapdragon on Vashon Highway at the south end of Vashon Town. So, let's see. Yeah, that was... I think you're absolutely right. The whole world is on a cusp in a bunch of ways, and I like how you are lifting up the question of how are we going to intentionally integrate with our fellow humans who happen to be new to the country, and how does this, you know, you said it perfectly, but essentially it's almost going to define who the Danes are moving forward in a way.
It will, I think, and it's actually also, I mean, of course, there are different perspectives, but from our perspective, successful integration is also actually a demographic necessity. The fertility rate in Denmark is simply too low to sustain the welfare state that we discussed earlier. So the whole system is not financially sustainable unless we provide extra hands. And of course, that can be done in various ways. We could have more children, a lot of fun. but we also need to make sure that integration that we succeed. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have, I mean, the mindset is crucial, and we need to have the, I know, and now I risk to sound like some sort of, you know, Obama wannabe. I mean, we need to have the yes we can hat on. Otherwise, we will not succeed. If everybody says, we know we will never succeed, and, you know, light matches and only focus on the negative issues, it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's perhaps the biggest risk.
Well, and ultimately, you know, there's this, I was going to say, that's sort of the Bernie Sanders hat of together there is nothing we cannot do. You know, yes. So the shift to seeing ourselves as members of a planet, as, you know, earthlings, as people who live together, who are all human, compared to this really ancient view of, you know, national or tribal or religious or whatever segregation method you want to use. Ultimately, what goes unsaid is, yeah, and I'm okay if you die. I mean, that's the underlying message, is if we close our borders, if we say, no, you can't come here, and we know that where you are is killing you, then we're saying to human beings, yeah, you know, just turn the boat around, go back with your babies, and you and your kids are probably going to die, and I'm okay with that. And that's not what people are okay with. So what we're looking for is that third option. You know, we're not okay with doing nothing and just having a bunch of people show up and have it be a big accidental mess. And we're not okay saying we have no humanity or compassion, so just go back and die because you're a problem. So the third option is the one that we're all looking for.
But I think if we look at the numbers and say, I mean, for instance, people in transit, we discussed that earlier. I think it's about 80 or 85% of refugees. They're actually physically located in, for instance, refugee camps, either inside their own country or in neighboring countries. So only a fraction, 10-15%, maybe it's even less, are actually coming to Europe or the US. Mm-hmm. So also, just to get that in perspective, the majority of the burden involved is actually the neighboring countries that are handling that. So what we have to do, we have to sort of handle the last 10-15%, and then of course we have, and that's at least my perspective, we have to look at individuals and look at their motives. Most of these people, they have the same dreams that you have and that I have.
Yeah.
We want to have a job, take care of our families, to see our children grow up healthy. It's the same dream, despite cultural differences. It's basically the same dream. 80% of the dream is the same. It's the same core.
Yeah, it's the same thing with people who come across the border illegally into the United States of America. You talk about putting numbers out there, right? Because you want to, a lot of times these numbers are not talked about in the media. And unless you've gone and found them yourself, you're not going to know. So I really appreciated that last week when you mentioned and reminded me of how many people really are stuck in refugee camps, and how many years and years and years people can end up living, and their children are growing up in refugee camps because they can't go back, they can't go forward. You know, it's a huge mess, and they're in the middle of it. Well, another number that I like to throw out there is people will say in the United States, they've been trained and prepped to say, well, gosh, golly, my parents came here as immigrants, but they came here legally. And those people in Central and South America, they should come here legally too. My dad did it. Why don't they do it? Okay. So the average amount of time that it takes for a person who lives in Mexico to get legal permission to come into the United States is 18 years, not months, years. You know, that's 18 years on average is not very realistic. So, of course, people just come across the border.
Of course, of course. And we have a similar situation in Europe. And I think, yeah, obviously, you cannot give everybody who knocks on the door a residence permit. I understand that perfectly well.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do, the least thing you can do, is to make sure that people will get a swift answer, even if it's a no, and so that they don't waste years in various camps. I've met people here in Denmark who are now well integrated. They were from Albania. They spent 6 years in a Danish refugee camp. Then they were given asylum. So now they're Danish citizens, but they are allowed to stay here. But they have to spend 6 years in a camp before they were allowed to, you know, come out in the Danish society and become productive citizen and contribute, which of course was what they wanted to.
Wow.
Get it. That's horrible. That's a waste of human potential. We have to make it work. I mean, there's no other option, for several reasons, for demographic reason, but also because the alternative, I mean, if we can't make it work, is that you will have a very easily identified group of people in Denmark with relatively dark skin, it would be a society where you would have, I wouldn't say, I won't use the word apartheid, but it will be something down that road.
You're basically at risk of creating, through lack of intentionality, by accident, a specific separate class of people.
Yes, and a class that is easily identified because they
Right.
would have brown skin like myself. And
Yeah.
I don't think I don't think that's
And the
I don't think it's
clothing's
good.
different too.
And the clothing and difference and I
Right.
don't think that's the I don't think we should go down that road.
Right. Now you had some ideas. I mean, it's of course is so important to actually be able to see, recognize, and speak out about the things that need to be addressed, but also what's really scary oftentimes is to bring forward an idea because that's when people can heckle you or shoot you down. And yet you do have some specific ideas about ways in which Denmark can more effectively integrate these new members of its society.
Yes, definitely, and some of the ideas that I've put forward have been tested successfully in individual municipalities. Specific mentoring programs where you make sure that young refugees they get a part-time job, say in a Danish supermarket, or I mean that they're introduced to Danish work culture and culture in general. And learn the social skills needed because there's in every society, in every culture, there are things that you cannot, the knowledge that you need to have that you cannot find in books. I mean, it has to be
Human to
literally
human.
human to human on the job training.
Right.
And instead of having people sitting in asylum centers doing nothing, wasting their human potential, I mean, they should be out, they should contribute. And they should get the work and learning experience from day one.
Well, especially the young people, if you think the teenagers, their minds and their worldviews are much more flexible. And if they're received with open arms, and then they start to make friends with people who are already well versed in the cultural ideas, expectations, beliefs, and I don't mean beliefs for like religion at all, but I just mean that all that culture is. And then those children will not only grow up into a young adults and adults who really better understand it, but they also can help to infuse because they'll speak the same language as mom and dad, who might find it harder to integrate or learn the new language. And they can then go ahead and bring, you know, the beauty of Danish society into their family. But if you lock up your young people, they will recognize it as unfair, as completely not their fault, not deserved, and they will be angry, hurt, and have no reason to ally with the Danish culture, and that's really not where you want to go.
No, then of course there will be conflicts if you allow that to happen. And what I suggest is that we should instead make sure that we create as many positive case stories as possible. And that's also getting back to my point about the media buyers. You need to have at least 10 positive stories for each negative story. Because the media will touch upon the negative stories. And if you want to counter that, I mean, it's just to have one good story for what for each negative story is not good enough. Then you will lose the battle. You need to have, and now I just mentioned the figure 10. It's just, you know, a figure.
No, you're
But we have.
completely right. Because, first of all, more good stories do exist than bad stories. That's the authentic reality. But then media comes in and says, oh, we're going to catch more attention over here with this negative story. So that natural inborn desire to, you know, sell papers or catch attention or grab the emotions of your listeners, that causes you to overfocus, which means you're now literally presenting sort of a false view of the whole. And then if they don't have an obligation to balance it out at all, I mean, yeah, I think that would be such a great thing for the listeners and the audience to start demanding of their media. I want the good stories. I don't want to hear about the car accident. There were probably 30 of them. I want to hear about who in a neighborhood did something amazing that made life better for 100 people around them.
And I think if we can work that out, if we can just make the media, influence the media just a little bit.
How about a lot?
I would love that, but I'm not that optimistic. But I would even go for a modest change. I think that would make a small change with the media would make a big change for society. Another example, I mean, some of the newcomers that we receive here in Denmark, some of them, maybe 10%, are relatively well educated. Well, mm-hmm. They have resources, they have competences. Let's get those competencies mapped from day one and figure out if they are to use those competencies in Denmark. Mm-hmm. What do they need? How can we make it fit? Instead of treating everybody in the same way. Here we have people who have it could be doctors, nurses, whatever. And of course, you cannot be a trained nurse in Syria and then walk through the door and work as a trained nurse in Copenhagen the next day. You can't do that.
But right, of course, you can't.
You have something to build on, mm-hmm. and let's use that practically and not have people sitting there who can contribute and wants to contribute, mm-hmm. And actually have skills that we need, and then just waste their time and our money in some sort of camp. And then, of course, those stories again should be told. Stories should be told.
There's a really cool story that just came across Facebook a few days ago for me, and it's sort of like that. And I can't exactly place which country exactly, but I think it's here actually. So, young man comes in illegally, works in the fields, does this, that, goes home, comes back, now one of the best, brain surgeons in the country, because managed to go ahead and integrate and was able to take advantage of getting education and now is this incredible contributor back to society and saves lives every day. So you guys have what's called a positives list in Denmark, which is a list of all the skills or job capabilities that if a person has that skill and they have a company in Denmark that wants to hire them to do that job, then you don't have to go through the extra hoops of getting permission. The company can hire you without having to sort of talk the government into agreeing that it's okay. Denmark doesn't have enough people to fulfill all of the jobs that are out there that you guys want filled. My husband, I know this because I'm looking into getting into Denmark with my family for a few years, so my kids have a chance to experience what is actually smells like, feels like, tastes like the true, honest ambiance of living in a successful socialist democracy so that they can understand it's possible and they can come back to America and say, oh, yes, we can actually live much better. We've done it. We know it's possible. And so my husband happens to be on the positives list. It would make sense to me that every single person who is moving through the immigrant process with Denmark would just automatically be vetted to see if they happen to be on the positives list. And if so, why not quickly shunt those people towards the extra, year of education they need to deal with the national differences in their field and put them to work. They'll learn the language faster and it will help the country.
And it has been done locally to some extent. And it's definitely something that we should pursue further. But there is a political discussion. There are my political opponents who would argue, no, these people shouldn't be here, regardless of their skills and what they are only here temporarily. And as soon as whatever the conflict in Syria is over, we will send them back. So there's no need to invest in them, no need to make them accustomed to Danish culture and habits. They just have to, sit it out and wait until the war is over, and then we'll send them back. That's one approach, and unfortunately, the party that's most in favor of that approach is say supporting the current government in Denmark and has a very decisive influence, whereas my party is currently in opposition. We have a different view. We think that the human potential of every person who comes here should be evaluated, and then we should figure out how do we get the most out of it as a society, but also for the individual in question. I mean, even if you're a refugee from, say, Syria, and you might plan to go back when the war is over, it's a lot better, we think, that we find out how you can be a part of our society in Denmark while you're here, how you can contribute. And then when you eventually go back to Syria, 5, 10 years from now, whenever, you're better suited to, if you're a doctor, for instance, I mean, you're better suited to be a doctor back in Syria than if you had wasted 10 years here sitting
right.
in a camp, staring into the wall. I mean, that's no good for anybody.
Yeah, that's really fascinating that is being put forward, that human, it's not at all like an internment camp. I'm not trying to suggest that, but it's more like just that storing humans in stasis in a non, you know, contributing fashion would even be proposed, given that, for example, in the US, the argument is often made that it is far less expensive for society to cover the educational costs of a young person and to provide them even with a basic income while they are going to school, so that they can actually, there's no point in saying, sure, you know, you can go to school, but you also have to pay for your own rent and your own this and your own that to someone who's living in an inner city, you know, and has nothing. So that is far less expensive than it is to pay for that same person who, in a state of despair, desperation, ends up in prison. So, you know, putting people on the dole, so to speak, and being like, you can't contribute, but we're going to take care of you for a period of time and then kick you out, that sounds like the more expensive option.
It's, I guess it is, but it's at least in Danish politics, it's also a matter of principle. And if you are convinced that these people should not be here, not be allowed to be here, we should have as few as possible, and they should be sent back as fast as possible, then I guess then you're also willing to pay in the bill and say, okay, we'll just, you know, pay for these people to sit and wait until whatever war is over and we can send them back. Whereas we have a different approach and say, well, first of all, we should not send people back, refugees back, worse off than they were when they came. On the contrary, we should invest in them. And then while they're here, they can make a positive contribution to our society. And then nobody knows how the future looks like when whatever war is over, then they can go back and then they have hopefully have qualifications that are still updated that they can use in their home country.
You know,
that's when we talk about refugees.
Right. I'll bet almost everyone in the millennial generation and probably people who are close to, you know, our age and below, I'll bet they all understand that there's just going to be another war and then another war. And then, I mean, you know, we have no idea how soon certain forces on the planet are going to decide to go after Iran. You know, so you this idea of, oh, this was a one-time thing. And, you know, the entire region of Northern Africa, the Middle East and Eastern Europe, oh, there'll never be another war. So we just have to deal with this and send these folks back. And then there won't be another flood of immigrants. You know, the reality is that there will always be sort of another war. So if we always work with people and make life the best it can be right now, in the day, in the moment, rather than assuming something about the future that we can't assume necessarily, because maybe there won't be a war, probably will be, then then I would say, like you say, we don't know what's going to come, but at least 5 years from now, whatever does come, at least the 5 years between now and then was the best it could be for all the people who were involved. It seems to me that the idea of accepting less than what we could do, or pushing people down and just expecting them to just endure, that's just a missed opportunity, it seems.
And I think as a global citizen, it's also my view that, I mean, if you take Denmark, we are one of the richest countries in Europe. According to a recent ranking, I think we've been surpassed by Norway. We're also the happiest people in the world. Mm-hmm. If we shouldn't help some of these unfortunate people, then who should?
Yeah.
If the wealthiest and happiest people will not help, who will? Who will?
Right. That's an excellent question. Wow. Yeah. The buck stops here is that idea we use about like the person at the top of a decision-making chain. But in a way, yeah, if you're the best off and happiest folks, in a way, it's like, well, gosh golly, right?
Yeah.
Same yeah. Thing. Well, we didn't get a chance to dive into green energy.
No, fair enough. Although, I have no idea how long time it will take. Yeah.
Well, actually, right now we're pretty much at the end. Can you believe that?
No, but I think we had a very good discussion. We came around a lot of what I consider extremely important issues. And the links between, say, integration, media buyers, I think that's
pretty strongly made. And that's important because people, if they continue to believe the media, then it's going to be very hard to educate them, because it's like if someone said, here's a joke book and here's a real book, and the real book is going to give you the information. The joke book is going to give you, you know, silly ideas that capture your attention, but they're not accurate. And if your students all say, yeah, but I like the joke book because it, you know, it grabs my attention, so I'm going to read that and then believe that that's the way the world is, well, then you're in a really tough spot. We got to get people looking.
That's a real danger. If you get so lazy that you don't want to find your own facts and just, you know, take anything you hear or read or see in the media for granted, then
yeah,
then you have a problem,
a serious problem.
And you might not even know about it.
right. I know. And so, alrighty. Well, gosh, thank you so much, David. I would like to give you a chance to just share essentially how people who are in Denmark, you know, who are in your, what's it called, your district?
Excuse me?
Are you in a district? You're running for a political office in a district, a region, you know, what's that?
Yes, in the municipality of Frederiksberg, which is actually an enclave within the capital of Copenhagen.
Right. Is there something specifically that you would like to be able to share with your fellow constituents, or is there a way that they can reach you, ask questions, connect with you? Maybe there's people who are doing great work with immigrants and they want to get the stories out and they want to call you up and share the good news. Why don't you go ahead and tell folks how they can get a hold of you?
Yes, of course, you're more than welcome to reach out to me, David Sebanek. I have a Facebook page called Frederiksberg Radical. I also have a web page, www.frederiksbergradical.dk. And I'm more than happy to learn about people having problems with integration in Frederiksberg. If I can help, I would love to do so. As mentioned in this program, I think it's absolutely crucial that we embrace the world and make sure that we use the human capital that's available in the optimal way.
And why don't you go ahead and say that in Danish too, because especially some of your older constituents may not be super fluent in English right now.
Mit navn er David Sebernick. Jeg er byrådskandidat for det radikale venstre på Frederiksberg. Du kan læse mere om mig og mine mærkesager på www.frederiksbergradikal.dk.
Tak.
Yes.
Thank you very much for tuning in. You've been listening to my interview with David Zeprinic, one of several guests I connected with when I went to the European Union this June. I hope that Focus On will allow you to contemplate new ideas and ask more creative questions. Many thanks go to Windermere Vachon, for it is their generosity that has given me the opportunity to create this show. My name is March Twisdale. And you've been listening to my interview with David Zeprinic here on Focus On, where my guests share how they hope to see the world change for the better, one shared idea at a time.
Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage from underneath the vestiture of law. The lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the right of every person to improve their plight. The laws of this republic they rewrite, and now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We had little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. the banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We'll not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets. We'll occupy the courts. We'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.